Talking girls, you know we got some problems. So tune on in the way we talk and how to solve them. We may laugh, we may learn, we might be your games, Miss MP.
All right, Lady Balls, before we dive into the episode, I have to tell you guys about a product that I've been using every day. I started taking AG1 because I was always forgetting to take my vitamins and pills, and it was getting expensive buying them all just to throw them out once they were expired. But I wanted to strengthen and support my immune system and have more energy. And that's where AG1 came in. With one delicious scoop of AG1, you're absorbing 75 high quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source ingredients, and probiotic to help you start your day off right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your immune system, your energy, recovery, and your focus. AKA, all the things that are important for athletes. Plus, bonus is actually affordable and cheaper than buying all those supplements. Not to mention, it tastes good. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is giving you a free 1-year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/soccergrl. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/soccergrl to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hi, Carly.
Hi, guys. You're right.
How are you?
Is the lighting okay? Just because it's nighttime here, so, and I've got like, it's very dark.
That's great. It's awesome.
I am good. How are you guys?
We're good. So you're home right now.
I am. I'm currently in a not so sunny London, as you can imagine. It's rained here for about, I don't know, the last time it wasn't raining, to be honest.
How do you deal with that? That's hard.
You know what it is? I didn't know any different until I played in San Diego last year. And I thought, why have I been doing this for pretty much the rest of my life? It's been a very silly thing to do, but I'm blessed, obviously, where I live in San Diego. But yeah, for some reason, you just, as a goalkeeper, you kind of love and hate it at the same time, because I'm not going to lie, I had some pretty bad burns from how dry the grass is in San Diego. And here you're just covered in mud all the time. So, but you're freezing. That's the only bad thing. But yeah, it's, I don't know, you just get through it somehow. I ask myself every year when it gets to this time of year, why am I doing this? But managed to keep plodding on for however many years it's been going on now.
That's true. I never thought how much the weather affects you guys, like the dryness and everything.
Yeah, it's like, it's crazy, really, because here playing for a good team is a good thing. But when you're playing for a good team in this country and it's freezing, obviously, I've been lucky that I haven't been playing here. Well, I've just been watching the girls. It was snowing one game and I was looking at AKB for Chelsea and she was stood there like this. And I was like, I remember being that person, because when your team's good, it's great, but you're also not touching the ball or moving. So you just like literally stood there freezing, waiting for something to happen. And then praying kind of nothing does happen, because you can't feel your hands, you can't feel your toes. So yeah, it's a stark contrast to when I got to San Diego. I got savaged by the sun. I had an awful t-shirt tan and yeah, got numerous grass burns because it was so dry. So yeah, it's a stark contrast, but it's also very, very fun in both respects.
I was gonna say, how are you enjoying San Diego? Because you were there last season too, right?
Yeah, I was, oh my god, I was so blessed. Yeah, I got picked up. It just happened really quickly over the Christmas time. San Diego came in for me, and I was quite happy at Chelsea. We were actually discussing the new contract for this coming up there, for this season it would have been. I was coaching then stuff, and I was quite content with what I was doing. And then Casey came in and was like, would you like to have we'll give you 2 years at San Diego. What do you think? And I was like, never played in America. Obviously, as a kid growing up, I was in the era of the first kind of NWSL or whatever it was called, the first time round, when the legends were all playing in it. And if you were a good player, you went to America, because it was franchised. You were getting paid money. There was crowds, good stadiums. And we were very much in a Premier League that was in its infancy, where you were getting 20 people at a game, etc. So I think as a kid or as a youngster, I was like, oh, it'd be always cool to play in America. And so I got the opportunity and I just thought, why not kind of end of my career, like end it with something that I always wanted to do. Everyone kept saying once I'd signed, was like, you're going to the best place in America, you're gonna love it, it's beautiful, blah blah. And I can't disagree with them, to be fair. Out of all the places we visited throughout the season, obviously I'm very biased because I live there, but in terms of the climate, the culture, the people, the place, it is a beautiful place to live. It's not never too hot, it's never really cold. Like you say, great coffee, great food, people and fans are great. So yeah, I feel very safe as well, which is something I never really thought I'd have to think about in a country, but in America you do have to think like that. So yeah, I do feel very, very blessed as to where I've been.
Yeah, we love San Diego. Every time we get to go out there, it's so nice. And We're all from New York, so like it okay. really got to adjust to the relaxed level. Like everyone,
oh, yeah,
still there. Like I'll impatiently be waiting for a coffee and be like, "Oh, people aren't rushing here." But it's
and like everywhere's in like everyone wears like athleisure wear. Like that's the new kind of thing that I found out in San Diego. Like everyone, doesn't matter what age you are, everyone's just in like leggings, shorts, t-shirts, vests, like hoodies, like. Even when you go out to bars, like it's still pretty chill. Like it's just everyone's exactly what you said, just very relaxed all of the time, which is a great place to live, like great environment to be in.
Yeah, definitely. What have you noticed playing wise? Like, do you find a big difference playing in the US compared to playing at home? Or like, have you kind of changed your style of play?
Yeah, a little bit. I just think that because I've been asked this a couple of times since I've been back on different podcasts and interviews that I've done, like, oh, is the WSL better than the NWSL or whatever? And I don't think you can compare them. I just think they're two completely different leagues with two completely different ways of playing. I would say tactically and technically, maybe this league's a little bit better just because I think we're brought up from a young age, very technical and tactical. And I think that in America, it's very like athletic. So I think you just got a lot of athletic players that are kind of end to end. And I think that's how the game is. So I learned very quickly because I had to play the Challenge Cup because Kaelin was away, how fast paced it was, like constantly. It's like anyone and Casey, I think Casey summarized it all great, was like in one play, you can look like you're going to score, but also in the same play, you can look like you're going to concede because it's that wild, but it's great. And the entertainment level is fantastic. And if you're a fan, like, there's never a team it doesn't matter if you got beat 5-0 the week before. Like, we had some terrible results in the Challenge Cup, but not one point did we sit in and just defend for our lives and knew we were up against Portland's and Seattle's who scored lots of goals or whatever. We still just went toe-to-toe, and every team has that mentality, like every team. And I don't know whether I say it's American mentality that you just always think you can win. And that's, I guess, from my experience of playing against an American US national team, is that that's what I always think about an American, is that they just think they're going to win all the time, like regardless, like doesn't matter who they are, where they've come from, whatever. They just have this winning mentality in whatever they do. And I think that's what it's like. And it's not that you don't have that in the WSL, but it's just a little bit more technical in terms of there are teams that are at the bottom of the league or have been beat that will just sit in their own half and play counter-attacking football for as long as they can, 80, 90 minutes. And that just doesn't exist in the NWSL. And I guess that's what makes it so fun. And that's where I probably had to change my game and realize as well how fast most forwards are in this league. every kind of team has a 100 meter track star with a technical ability to finish players off. And that's probably like a huge difference. You don't really have those out and out big strong number nines that just maybe stand and do that kind of thing. It's just your forward lines are just, all of them are just very quick, very pacey, very athletic, and like, say, if you've got the quality of Sophia Smith, Alex Morgans, and say you've got people that can finish as well, which is such a good combination to have. So it's a really exciting league. That's what I must say. Not that the WSL was boring, but there were games where you're kind of like, we know what this is going to be. I'm going to stand freezing for 90 minutes and not really touch the ball while we try and break down the team.
You'll be moving around the US. Sorry, Carly.
It must be so amazing just to, as a professional athlete, like, you are growing and becoming a more well-balanced player by playing here, because you're learning things here that maybe you, like you said, like, it's more tactical and technical in England versus, you know, the athleticism in America. So do you feel like coming here and playing here has really helped you improve your game in areas that you didn't think that you needed to?
Yeah, I mean, trust me, like, I'm 35, so I'm in the last stage of my career, and not that I was coming for a bit of retirement or a holiday, but there was parts of me that knew I was going to have to play games because Kaelin would be away, but also it gave me an opportunity, like you say, to always kind of learn and always grow, because as well as me being second to Kaelin, like, I'm fully aware, for me, Kaelin Sheridan is one of, if the not, is the best goalkeeper in the world. That's just my general opinion. Consistently, I think this year she's had a fantastic year, and it's important that if I'm going to play with her and train with her every day, that I keep pushing her. And that means I have to keep learning and keep growing as a player. If I'm not doing that, then I'm not doing my job. And I had that discussion with Casey at the end of the season, that as long as I'm pushing Kaelin, I'm pushing myself, then that makes us a better unit and us a better team, which I think Kaelin had a great year last year. And I'm very proud of her for pushing herself, pushing her limits. And I think as a unit, we did really well. I think we conceded not a lot of goals, etc., and stuff like that. So I think, again, if I'm going to play, I have to keep learning. I think coming to America was key to that. But also, if I want to coach, I think that which is hopefully something that I will go on to do. I think it's great to coach, to be able to look at different ways of playing throughout the world. I did a stint in Perth in Australia in 2012, for 3 months, which again was really different, but also like great knowledge to know that the way their system works, the way the American system works in terms of the college and the girls that come out of college and what their coaching's been like and their journey's been like to the superstar internationals who've consistently played against them but never been able to play in a team with them, with the likes of Alex Morgan and Abigail Kemper and Emily Van Edmund and Sophia Jacobson. Like, they're girls that I've always played against, and now I get to work with them in a team, see how they operate day to day, which is unbelievable, the professionalism of them, but also learn, because I think that if you want to stay in the game and stay on the field, you have to keep learning. Doesn't matter how old you are, unfortunately.
What age would you want to coach when you start coaching?
Sorry, what age would I want to coach?
Yeah.
So when I was at Chelsea before I left to San Diego, I was doing under 11s, under 12s, under 14s, 16s and 18s. And that was a discussion that me and Stuart had, who's the head goalkeeper coach at Chelsea at the time. And he was just like, if you want to coach, you need to learn all age groups first, and learning the Doddies, kind of like the little ones. It's just a different way of coaching, but it also gives you that experience of what it's like to talk to the young girls and how they learn, how they absorb information, how fun you have to make it and keep them engaged. Because coaching, I think the older and more mature or the more professional players, I think would be easy because they just relate to you straight away and you can relate to them because you've worked with them. But when you go with the little ones and they're cartwheeling around the pitch and you're trying to keep them involved and they're stood on the post talking to you, not watching what's going on, that's a whole other different kettle of fish. If from that learning, I think that I'd love to work with, not to sound snobby, but I probably wouldn't work with the girls that couldn't catch balls. I think I'd really struggle with that. I think I'd like to work with academy players, probably 16s to 18s. And if I was going to go international, then I'd probably again work with 15s and 17s. I think it's a really good, I've got a really big thing about trying to develop goalkeepers at that age. I think when you hit puberty as a female, I think those years are so important to how you develop as a footballer and a goalkeeper. I think that now more than ever, we are footballers, not just goalkeepers. You're asked to use your feet as much as your hands these days. So I think that if you can get a hold of kids at such a young age and learn them the most important parts of the game and get them physically ready for the next stage in their career and their next kind of growth spurt or whatever, I think you're in good stead to produce a very good goalkeeper. And I think that coming home and doing that, we've produced some fantastic outfield players and we have some good goalkeepers at the minute, some very good goalkeepers. But I'd like to think that we were, as a nation, constantly producing world-class goalkeepers, and I think that's really important to me.
What do you think is important for that age, how you were saying in puberty, like 15 16, what's something that a keeper should be focusing on during that time?
I think it's really difficult because at the minute it's the structure and it's the contact time. So I think depending on how young you've been picked up is like your basics. I think handling's so key, how you catch, how you stand in the goal, how where you are in the goal. But there's so many different factors to that because you've got kids going through different growth spurts as well in that. So again, you look at goalkeepers now, we're trying to go to a bit of a taller age, a taller range of goalkeeper. I think that's probably the next stage. If we go through what the men did, I always laugh at this because if you watch, we have a channel called Sky Sports and we have like 80s and 90s football matches on, early 2000s. Old football games. When you watch them, the keepers aren't very big, the male ones. They're like 5'9", 6', Barthez, Shea Given, some of the world's best or whatever. And height was never spoke about, size of the goals was never spoke about. It was just, they got on with it. If they got lobbed, they got lobbed, if whatever. All of a sudden, obviously, the female game gets put on TV. It's spoken about frequently. But I don't think that's due to the height. I think that's due to coaching. I think that a lot of male goalkeepers or goalkeeper coaches came into the women's game and coached just like men. So that's great. If I'm 6'5" and I'm Thibaut Courtois, I can stand 6-7 yards outside my goal and I'm not going to get lobbed because I cover the goal fine. But if I'm Carly Telford and I'm 5'8" and I stand there, I'm going to get lobbed. I'm not going to make it back and whatever. So then you get questions asked as to what's the goalkeeper doing. I just think that comes down to coaching at an early level. But I do think that as the game grows, and I think the men did it obviously in that time, that they looked at kids that were like 12, 13, 14, what's their parents' height like? What sports do they play? Whatever. And then you see a massive growth spot in the men's game. So then they went through a big transition of big, tall goalkeepers, big goalkeepers. And I'm not saying that's going to happen in the women's game, but it'd be interesting to see if we could do something similar. And that would be a good conversation to have with, I think, the people who are in charge, the FA, such to see if we can go down that route and steal some kids that are rowers, basketballers, netballers, and get them into a bit of goalkeeping and see what they can do, because they're already athletic, they're already moving, they're already kind of established in an athletic stage, but now we've just got to stick some gloves on them and see how they move around in goal at 14, 15, 16. And if they enjoy it, minus the weather, and getting a ball smashed at you all the time, if you're brave enough to do that, it's stupid enough, one of the two. But I do think that, yeah, 15, 16, 17 is huge, because that's when you do have, I think it's when you kind of grow into your limbs a little bit more. And I think the importance of being agile, being able to move your hands and feet at the same time, quickly and powerfully, is so important. And as well, I think by that point as well, you know how to strike a ball really well, which seems really bizarre, but I think that you just know when someone can technically hit a ball well and how they do it. And I think that's how you have to, I'd say 15, 16, or maybe even younger, that's when you teach those techniques, so that when players or goalkeepers are on the field, they feel just as comfortable and are able to, like a Kaelin Sheridan, use both feet very comfortably, and it becomes a weapon for your team or a weapon for you later in your stages of life, when you're kind of trying to be separated from who's the best goalkeeper, who's not, or what can they do. Tell you what, if you can use both feet, it's going to stick you up there quite highly.
Throughout your
long-winded answer, sorry.
That was a great answer. I'm just curious. So obviously the importance of that age throughout your entire playing career, what do you feel like the biggest period of growth was for you? Like at what age as a keeper?
This is the funny bit. So for me, I probably had my best growth period when I was 27 or 28.
That's the most improvements in your game.
But it's also when I probably had the best and most consistent amount of coaching. So my kind of career, and obviously I played in, let's call it the semi-professional, the non-professional era of women's football over here. So like you say, the old Premier League, where we'd have someone's dad come and just warm us up so we were ready for shooting. When I was at Notts County, so we were in the WSL the first year, I had, believe it or not, a 75-year-old goalkeeper coach who couldn't kick the ball off the floor, but he could volley, so that was all right. But I was actually still playing international football at that stage, which is actually wild to think. And it wasn't until I went to Chelsea and I had Stuart, who's currently still goalkeeping coach now, consistency every day, but he's also a world-class goalkeeping coach. So my levels kind of went from I'm doing okay and probably like the little duck that goes across the water. Like I look like I'm doing all right. My little feet are going 100 miles an hour because I'm trying to keep up with Karen Bardsley and Siobhan Chamberlain and stuff at the time. But realistically, I was just, there was no way of me really getting any better because I wasn't getting the coaching that I needed. And then I went to Chelsea and you go into a world-class environment straight away. And not only are you getting good coaching, you're playing against and with some of the best players in the world. So I'd say that was my best growth period. And that's when I most consistently played for England. I had a good spell. A little bit spell under Mark, good spell under Mark, under Phil Neville, and that was because I was playing and I was training really well and I had a good environment. So I just think that should be happening at such a younger age. And the girls that are getting that, the Hannah Hamptons, the Ellie Roebucks, the Sandy MacGyvers, the English goalkeepers, let's say, you can see the difference in their growth, their mentality, the way they work around the goal, how confident they are, and also like their ability in and around the goal is just in such a good place at such a young age. That it's just going to set them up so well for the future when they actually get their stint at national level. And some of them now have already played in Champions League finals, already played Champions League, etc. They're ticking boxes off that I only did when I was 28, 29. And they're doing it at 20, 21, which is unbelievable. And that's how it should be. So that was my growth, my best growth time, I guess. But I'd like to think that we can get a hold of goalkeepers now at a much younger age and expose them to a lot more so that they don't have to wait as long. And that's just the growth of the game, which is in a great place right now. Unfortunately, it wasn't when I was younger, let's say.
You mentioned confidence in the goal. Do you have any advice for anyone listening who is struggling with that confidence?
I think it's a difficult one. I think, like you say, I think it all comes down to your team environment and your, let's say, your goalkeeper union. If for me personally, I think that we've all been through stages, outfielders, goalkeepers, where things, you're not scoring, you're conceding goals, someone's skinned your ass three or four times and you've felt like you're the reason for conceding the goal or for giving away a penalty or whatever it is. I think for me, it's consistency and drawing board and your environment. I think that if you are given a safe environment to make mistakes, the likelihood is you'll do them in training. So there's no punishment. You don't feel as bad and you learn from it. I think that if you're under a pressure environment where you feel threatened or you feel like you're going to lose your position or you're going to be shouted at or whatever that, I think you're likely to make mistakes in the most pressurized environments, which is usually game day. because you don't want to mess up because you know that everyone's watching. And I think that, excuse me, I think that that's what's been really good about the coaches I've played underneath, is that I've felt no pressure, or I've been in unions or in teams where we know mistakes are going to happen because it's part of the game. It's part of life as such. But it's how we bounce back, or do we learn from it? So it's watching video. It's speaking to my first or second choice goalkeeper at the time. Is this anything you would have done better? Feeling safe, and then having the backing of the coach, which is huge. And then it just comes down to practice. That's all you can do, is just consistency in practice, consistency in what you do, your habits. If you can turn up on a Sunday or Saturday knowing that you've done everything you needed to that week, I think you don't go onto the pitch. If something happens, you don't look back and think, oh, that's probably because I didn't do that week, or it's just probably a mistake, which you can deal with, you can dust yourself down from. But if you go onto that pitch doubting what you've done that week or how you've prepared, I think that's already where you're already shot your own confidence, for one, and two, you're likely to, like say, come across and make mistakes. So I think that I've learned there has been times where that has been the case, or I've had difficult conversations with the coaches. Are you doing enough? Have you done enough? Do you want to be here, etc., as I've grown up. And I think that the best thing that I could have done is when I've had to step up in big moments, when I've needed to, I've looked and I've crossed the white line and I've just felt like I'm just going to have a good time. I just want to do what I love doing, because I know that I've ticked all my boxes. So if something happens, it happens. If I concede a goal, I've done all I can. There's nothing more I could have done. And I think then you can reflect better and you move on from it quicker. So it doesn't become a thing that eats away into the next week and the next week. So that you say, then it becomes a confidence thing and you find yourself in a rut.
That was a great answer.
I feel like she's really harped on the fact that it being a keeper, like there's so much mental side of it that players need to be working on at a younger level. Cause I feel like the whole thing with confidence, that, I mean, how confident do you need to be as a keeper? You have to be so confident in your decisions and like also be confident that if you fail and make a mistake, you can, the next play that you make, just try your hardest and like bounce back from it. And I feel like it's just so important to just make that note. It also brings me to my next question. Is there anything now that you do to help your mental state to stay confident in the professional league?
I mean, look, like last year, like if you look at the Challenge Cup games that I played in, I think we conceded about 12 goals, and I think I was in goal for all of them. And at one point I was like, I don't even know if I'm good enough anymore. Maybe the game's gone past me. As you get older, you think, well, maybe like it happens to all of us at some point, like maybe I'm just not good enough. And then, like you say, it was the people that were around me. I'd come in and had one week pre-season because of my visa and stuff. Again, I was adjusting to the league and how fast it was. And then also I just reflected on like what I'd done in my career and kind of who I was and what I was capable of. And I was like, I knew there were goals that I conceded that I wouldn't usually concede or whatever. So I knew that just was me needing to go back into full training, get some good weeks under my belt, some consistency, because like you say, I think I'd only trained with the team 3 or 4 times consistently. And that was just, that was me. Reflection is a huge thing. I think that as kids or as youngsters, I think, like you say, mental health in general, and I think mental part of the game's not addressed enough. I think that if you are a young kid, that I think being able to understand yourself, I don't think you do that till you're older. But I think that people, like more people like me and older players, being able to talk about it at an older age and giving them the tools at a younger age to do it and know that it's all right to do and reflect and know that mistakes are going to happen, not just in football, in life. But it's, again, for me, I think that when you're a kid, you just think the worst thing possible is making a mistake in anything you do, whether that's your homework, schoolwork, I don't know, like something you haven't done or you've said, it just makes you feel awful. But I think that when you get old, you realize they're also the most important moments in your life, because that's when you learn. So mistakes, you grow from it. And that's what I've learned, is that my mistakes or kind of things that I did, I think that I just went away. I had some discussions with Louis and Kaelin. We would reflect as a goalkeeping group on the goals that were conceded. But also I think that as well, it's so important as a coach that you back things up, the good with the bad or the bad with the good, whatever way around you want to look at it. So we'll talk about what we've done or could have done better. But also, like, let's look at the 90 minutes you've played. Like, it wasn't all bad. You have made saves still. You have distributed well. And you're going to take those things into next week. And let's work on the things that, was it your angle? Was it your timing? Was it whatever? And I think that those things, there's always something you can look at and reflect on. And I don't think it matters whether you're 13, 14, 15. and where you want to be seems so far away because you're just the kid and you're still in school, or whether you're my age, 35, at the end of your career, playing in one of the best leagues in the world, I think you can always reflect and want to grow as a player. And I think having what you would probably class when you were younger as a difficult conversation with your coach, I think is actually what coaches love, but you don't realize that again until you're older. So knocking on the door and being like, coach, like, do you think I could have done better at this or whatever? Like, you think as a kid, you think, nah, like, I don't want to bother them, or he's just going to be annoyed at me because we lost or whatever. Like, coaches are there for a reason. It's to make you a better player, a better person. That's their whole job, like, for me. So I think that if you go in there asking for help, they're usually like, hallelujah, let's sit down, let's have a conversation. Like, how can we make you better? How can we make you feel better? So I think that's huge for me. I think that I still do that now, but I probably didn't learn to do that until I was, 26, 27? Like, because again, I was the person that was like, nah, I'll just knock on the door. I'll not knock on the door. Like, I don't want to bother them, or I think I'm doing all right. I'll just keep going, or hopefully this week will be better. But now, like, good or bad, like, even when you're playing well, to knock on the door and just get some, like, I feel good, coach, like, is everything all right? Is anything you need me to do better? Like, that's cool too. And sometimes it's nice to have the coach, for it, or put it in English terms, blow a bit, smoke up your ass. Which feels nice. Like, it's a nice like thing to feel good about, like, when someone speaks nicely about you, because even the best players in the world need a bit of well done and you're doing great. But when you're struggling or you're not sure, then just come speak to the coach. Like, I don't care what age you are, just have the confidence to do it. They just want to make you a better player and a better person because of it. And I think that's ultimately what I'd advise most young kids to do.
I love that, because the longer you go without, like, communicating with your coach, the more of a thing it feels like. It feels like this big, scary freaking thing. So even if, like, there's not much to even go over, it's just so nice to get used to communicating with them and kind of leaving that channel open, so that when you do have to get criticism from them, it's not life shattering as you're receiving it. You're in college. But I love that advice.
Exactly. And the coach probably doesn't think something's wrong when you go up to their office, like,
oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. What are you doing here? Is everything okay?
No, the offices.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's to me, it's so important. And as well, like, I've had times where it's like, oh, I've knocked on the door, like, oh, you and we've had a conversation, it's like, oh, you do care. Because sometimes it does come across like you don't care either, and like, you think that's the least that I've just been absolutely pooing myself about coming up to your office, really, because I've left it, like you said, for about 4 weeks when I should have addressed it like 3-4 weeks ago when it was fresh as well. And that's the thing, it's fresh in your coaches and your mind, so everything is real and how it seems at the time as well. If you leave it, things might get distorted or whatever, and how it felt, like, it's really hard to remember. Oh, do you remember 4 weeks ago when such and such happened? And the coach is going, right, there's been 4 games since we've played this, doesn't that? And actually, no, but I'm going to try and guess. And then it doesn't fit. All of a sudden, it's not as real anymore. So, yeah, I think addressing it. I'm not saying you have to knock on the door every week. That's far from the point. But I just feel like it's just a nice thing to have, that when you can reflect as a group and as an individual. And it just shows that, for me, that you want to be a better person, a better player. And I think those players as well probably more than likely will make it to the top of whatever they decide to do.
Absolutely. I love that advice. So earlier you had said, when you mentioned that you were second to Kaylin, I was curious, how have you evolved in your career of, like, accepting things like that? Because for goalies, it's so competitive. It's such a crazy thing because you guys have so much time spending together. You have such a strong, important relationship, but then you're competing for playing time. How do you stay motivated but still have a good relationship with another keeper? How are you accepting if you're not starting or if you're not getting time? Like, because again,
is this me opening the Pandora's box of the goalkeeper union? Is that what you want to know about? Is that what's going on here? Ooh, I'm not sure about that. Yeah, I think that for me, that is the ultimate team within a team, is the goalkeeper union. I think that if you have a strong goalkeeping group, and it's more of an understanding than an acceptance. Let's put it that way. So I think if each player within the group understands their role, I think the harmony within the group is a lot easier. So therefore, I think working every day with each other and pushing each other is a lot easier. If there is an uncertainty or a dominancy within the group that's tugging 2 or 3 ways, I think that's when it becomes difficult and hard. And I think that's comes down to recruitment, for one. So I think how a coach or a goalkeeper coach recruits and creates their kind of union. Everyone could be like, let's go and recruit the best goalkeepers in the world to our team. So let's bring in 3 of the best. How are you keeping all the 3 of them happy as a goalkeeper coach and as a manager? Because all 3 of them want to play every single week, and that's not possible. And also you want fluidity and consistency within your back line all the time. So having usually the same goalkeeper and back four is pretty consistent for any manager. So I think that, again, for me, I think it's something that I've learned to do because I've been number one, I've been number two, and I've been number three, whether that's been at club or international. And I haven't liked either any of those positions other than when I've been playing, if I'm honest. And when you're younger, it's very hard because there's lots of different factors that you look into as a player. I've trained well this week. I don't think she's trained this well this week. So why aren't I playing? She made a mistake last week. I haven't made any mistakes again. Why aren't I playing? There's lots of things you can look into. And at the end of the day, like with any player, not just goalkeepers, like the decision is out of your hands. All you can do is rock up every day and be you and train as hard as you can and keep, I guess, the old saying of within your bubble, because that's what you can control. There's so much is so hard when you're younger to not think like that, because as well, when you're younger, usually you have been the best. When you start going up in their academies and getting picked for WSL and NWSL, and you've come from a college, you were the first picked, you were the first on the team, you might come from like an all-star team or whatever it is, best conference team. I don't know what you have in America. Sorry, I'm making that bit up. Whatever they have, like the best of class and stuff. And then all of a sudden you come in, you get drafted and you might not even be starting, or you might not even be in the squad. And I think that's a big mentality shift for a lot of the rookies and for a lot of the girls that come into it. But at the same time, like the players ahead of you are there for a reason. They've done their time, they've done their training, they've got their experience a bit more than you, and you're here to learn effectively. And I think that learning, keeping your head down, working hard, eventually, again, for me, those are the types of players that will go on and shine. I think the ones that, excuse the language, moan, bitch, and have nothing good to say about their teammates or each other or the manager are usually the ones that end up getting moved around clubs, or there's no consistency within their playing time or whatever, because at the end of the day, like, a happy team is a winning team, usually. And if that team's not happy because there's no harmony in it, and there's whatever, because players don't understand their roles or are unhappy. And don't get me wrong, like, that happens in every team. There's definitely times when there's been discussions where we're like, oh, I think she should be playing, she's actually done really well, or someone's not scoring, she should be dropped or whatever, or she's conceded three, maybe she shouldn't play next week. But again, it comes to belief from the manager and consistency. So I think that if someone had a bad game and they dropped them every week, all of a sudden, like I was saying to you earlier, everyone's thinking to themselves, shitting themselves, like, if I have a bad game this week, she's just going to drop us. Like, what kind of, now everyone's looking at each other going, well, we can't have, and everyone's like then feeling not confident or panicked. So I think that, yeah, I think that the goalkeeper union is so special, because I think that if you recruit well, so obviously you got Kaylin, who is, I would say, in her prime or coming into her prime. So I knew, fully aware that I kind of not really played for Chelsea for a couple of years. I was pretty, happy with that. I was at the back end of my career. I'd played in a World Cup. I'd done the things that I wanted to. COVID mucked things up a little bit, because I would like to have done a home Euros, but because everything, it delayed it. So it is what it is. And I was kind of content. Like, I've been in so many really successful goalkeeper unions when I look back, in terms of who I've been able to train with, in terms of KB and Shiv, and then even at Chelsea, Hedvig, AKB, some of the best goalkeepers in the world. So going to San Diego was a great pull as well, because I was like, I get to work for me with someone who I think is going to be or is potentially one of the best goalkeepers in the world. And if I have the opportunity to push her to be the best, I think I would retire a happy person, knowing that I've contributed towards that. And then usually as your third choice, you'll have a youngster. So at Chelsea, there was me, AKB, and Emily Orman, who was only, I think, 16 or 17 at the time, like a couple of years ago. And then we brought in Zachira. And Emily went out on loan. So there was me, Zachira, and Anne. Again, so at the time, you've got Anne, who's playing really, really well. Zachira, who's biting at the bit. She's 24, 25, just come from Sweden, like playing in a better league. Now she's playing Champions League, wants to play Champions League, wants to do this. And you got me, who's kind of like in there being like, right, guys, like, let's just calm down. Let's just make sure we're going to get, like, you're fighting for it, but like, we're having good sessions. There's no animosity. The environment's competitive, but it's fun. And I think that was a really good balance that we had there. And I think that's at San Diego, it's pretty similar. Like, we know Kaylin's going to play most games unless she's away. So it's preparing her. But at the same time, like, my levels have to be high, because in one quick motion, which I found out at Chelsea and for England at the World Cup, for instance, someone could get injured and you have to play. So when I said I was understanding and not kind of, what is the word I used? can't remember the word I use, but like kind of just complacent because I know my role. I think then I don't train well. I don't train at a good enough level. And then I go into that weekend if I'm needed, underprepared. And then we've got a confidence issue. And then we've got, I'm not sure, which means I'm probably not going to play to the best of my ability. So I think that's it. That's the thing. I just think that with goalkeeping, I think obviously everyone wants to play. And I think there's opportunities to go and get that from everywhere now. There's so many teams, so many countries, so many places you can go and learn, let's say, the beautiful game if you need that. But I think for goalkeepers, I think at the minute, goalkeeping, who your goalkeeping coach is, I don't think there's enough really high quality ones. So I think if you're at a team that gives you that, I think sometimes maybe sitting tight and learning within a good goalkeeper unit and getting inconsistent games, maybe you're playing cup games or whatever, but you're getting the best coaching, so it's actually making you a better goalkeeper. So then you can move on later, or you get better, so you push that number one out, or you just go and get games, and the goalkeeping coach might not be great, but you're getting game time. And I'd say you could do that at a younger age level, maybe, and then come back to somewhere else better. So someone like Emily she went to Crystal Palace and was still with us a little bit at Chelsea, but was getting a game time at 18 years old. So that was great for her. But then she was coming back and training with us. So she got the best of both worlds. I think being able to do that is really key. I just think that sometimes you've just got to sit tight, learn, and just develop. Like, that's the thing. You can't have everything right now. Sometimes there's a time to it. And I remember having a conversation with Mary Earps. We went to Qatar. Phil took us there. I don't know, what's it, 2017, 18? And Mary's really frustrated. So I think I wasn't playing, or something was going on. I was playing. Shiv wasn't playing. Mary was kind of on the fringes of not getting any game time at all under Phil. And she was just like, Carl, like, I don't know what to do. I'm sick of it. Like, I don't know if I'm good enough. But pretty much what she said in a couple of interviews since, really questioned whether she was good enough at this level anymore. And I just said, Mary, I was like, you're 24 years old. There's no one really played for England internationally consistently until you're 27, 28. You look at KB, Shiv, me when I got a chance, Rachel Brown, the list goes on. So I was like, sometimes, mate, you just got to sit tight and just like put your head down and grind. And also, like, some of the decisions that I made are out your hands. Doesn't matter how good you think you are, how good your goalkeeping coach, your club's telling you are. The manager doesn't like you or doesn't want to play you. There's nothing you can do. Like, you just have to grin and bear it. Just, that's it. I mean, you're still here. You're still away with England and you're still like, whatever. And now I look now and I just think the conversation that we had was just like nice to reflect on. Cause I'm like, she played in Euros and won Euros. And if she hadn't just sat tight and she just maybe chucked the towel in because of whatever, like, would she have done that? And she could potentially go on, like, say, to win a World Cup and go down as one of the greatest ever goalkeepers to put on an English shirt, which is unbelievable, really. And it's just from sitting tight and just, I don't know, just enjoying what you do and letting the rest take care of itself. And it sounds, again, so idle sometimes, but also what we've discussed earlier is like, go and knock on the door. If you're sat there doing everything you can and you're not sure anymore, go and knock on the door with the coach, have a conversation. And it might not be what you want to hear. We don't think you're good enough, whatever. And then you know you can move on. That's when you know you need to change your surroundings and your settings. But if it's just maybe something small and we just need you to do this, and you get back on the grass, or you get back in the gym and you work on those things. So yeah, the goalkeeping union is a precious thing. Very hard for people to understand that aren't in it, but it's a very fun environment to work in. If you get the right people in there and the right drive and the right coach, like, you literally get to have fun for 45 minutes nearly every day before you get dragged into a team session and you just stand there and you get pump balls out or whatever, cannon fodder.
You had so many golden nuggets in there that I think, I know you're saying it's hard for players who are not, you know, in the situation of having multiple goalkeepers on the team to understand. But from what you said, like, just always be showing up and working your hardest and ready to play, because you never know when your time is going to happen. And then also, like you said, like, talk to your coach when you feel like you need to work on things more. Let them know that you care about getting better. And then also at the same time, like, sometimes it's out of your control. Your coach is going to choose what they want to choose. And I feel like those are really nice reminders, because of course there's going to be goalkeepers here listening who feel so defeated when they are the second string goalkeeper, third string, and they're not getting any playing time. So you really gave us such amazing advice just for the players listening that I certainly have never heard, because I'm not a goalkeeper. And I thought about how you guys are, like, you train separately sometimes and you're a group in itself. Yeah. On your team. So very, very awesome.
And also, like, second and third, you might be someone's second or third, but in someone else's eyes, you could be someone's first. So that's another thing I think to always hold on to, that just because you are second or third doesn't mean that's what you have to hold on to for the rest of your career either. So I think that's important. Bless you.
Carly, thank you so much for coming on. I feel like we learned so much about you and the goalkeeper union that we'll never
honestly, it's a pleasure. But yeah, if you guys are over in New York or I'm over that way and you want to like catch up, have a coffee or like come to a game or everything, just let me know, because my tickets are usually always available unless Alex Morgan's stealing them. She likes to do that a lot. But if I have people, I'm like, not this week, Alex. She's like, oh, Carl, like, who have you got coming? I said, don't you worry. I do have friends in other places, actually.
All right, we're going to
be, I've just given them to someone else.
We'll pick you up on that. That sounds fun.
But thank you for having me on. Take care, guys. Bye.
Bye.
We got some problems, so tune on in, away we talk and how to solve them. We may laugh, we may learn, we might be